From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, here we are on a Thursday evening on a, let's call it temperate evening here in Hobart. You're with The Dice Men Cometh. We are Hobart's, nay, Australia's, nay, maybe in fact, the Southern Hemisphere's leading board game podcast. We talk tabletop games. That's board games, card games, role-playing games, all other sort of table-based activities that you can do with your friends, your family, your loved ones, that will keep you occupied for hours and hours and hours. I am Mark. I'm here tonight with Garth.
Garth, hello. Hello, I am here.
Garth is back. Mm. And?
Leon, and I'm showing enthusiasm. Look at me, Garth.
Yeah, smile when you talk, it makes you sound more engaging.
Oh, you can tell it's fake, can't you?
Correct. So, Leon, on the back of 85 hours of work this very day alone.
Hey, 84, don't exaggerate.
Sorry, I don't want to pick it up. Mm. But look, we are, you know, really excited. It's episode, is it 240 now?
240. We're only 10 episodes away from our, I can't think what it's called.
240th
episode. Sesquicentenary or something? I don't know. It's crazy.
Anyway, we're very close to another milestone, but more importantly, we are here every single week.
Well, I tried to Google best board game podcast in South Africa and best board game podcast in South America.
Yep.
Nothing came up.
No, wow.
So that's why I'm saying potentially, and I'd like to hear from listeners if they know others, potentially we may be the leading tabletop games podcast in this half of the world.
That's pretty good. Now, I must say, though, listening to a Shut Up and Sit Down episode from a long, long, long time ago, Quinns agreed to send down to Antarctica games.
Mm.
Because in Antarctica, they usually go down for the whole winter contract. And it was all about sending down games that were perfect for people who are, in essence, stuck on an island with nowhere else to go.
Like, what was that one we played? I can't remember the name of it. Based on The Thing.
The Thing?
Was it called The Thing?
No. It was
Who Goes There?
Yep, that's
the one. That's right. Our friend Aiden had it. Where you were in a base on Antarctica.
Don't play that game. Have we talked about this game?
We have.
Okay. Yeah, I think we agreed don't play with. Yep, but no, they sent down games like Escape. I'll Survive, Escape from Atlantis, and Cosmic Encounter, and all these games that are basically mechanically very simple.
Yeah.
But replayability is off the show. Yes. And look, just to put a little bit of a continuity in terms of what we're going to be talking about, I've just come back from Essen Unplugged, which is an event run by LFG in Canberra.
So you have, Garth,
showcasing
yeah.
all the games from Essen that were hit and potentially hot. And I was able to spend some time again with let's call him friend of the show, Martin Wallace, world-renowned designer.
Well, he likes to say friend of the Dice Man when he introduces himself to people.
He normally does. So I had a good chat with him, and for him it's all about, I want to make a mechanically simple game where it's interesting decisions every single time.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to play Wildlands and a few other of Martin's games over the weekend. But they're the kind of games that you want to take to an island, games that are mechanically simple and easy to teach to, in inverted commas, non-gamers, because you don't want to spend a 45 minutes explaining rules. You just
want to say, this is how you do it.
But why you do it is the interesting thing. And that's the thing I love about board games. It's all about the why, not the what.
Okay.
And on that note, why don't we go to a song, Mark, and then we can come back and talk about what I've been playing lately.
Oh, yeah, baby. That's the Black Keys with the Remember When. Here with the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Remember when you were thinking, if only I could go on a cruise on water and meet like-minded board gamers and play some games while on said cruise? Well, no need to ask anymore. It's happening.
I know.
We've been in touch with Tina. Big shout out to Tina. She's the organizer, along with you, Garth.
Yes.
of the board game geek, not board game, the Oz Board Game Geek Cruise Con, no, the Board Game Cruise Club Australia. I think that's the official name. We could call it Dice Men Seacon.
I don't think anyone would appreciate that, but yes, we could.
So if you're interested in going on a boat, look, I'm on a boat. Going on a boat to play board games, visit some Pacific Isles, then I would head you towards a little website called BoardGameCruiseClub.com. I'm very excited about this. It's a 9-night cruise to New Caledonia, departing Sydney on the 9th of September. For 9 nights, did I mention that? Where a whole bunch of board gaming people are going to be on the ship, cruising and playing board games. Now, if we, and I say we because I hope to be there, if we can get at least 40 people, that's not many really, that's like 10 four-player games or 8 five-player games or even 5 eight-player games.
Or if we 4 10-player games.
Oh, what 10-player games are there, Garth? Come on.
Telestrations. Okay. Time's up.
Okay. Deception. Anyway, if we can get at least 40 bookings on this cruise, we can get some dedicated space on board the ship, which is the Carnival Spirit, to play board games whenever and wherever we like. So, prices are starting at $12.99 per person twin share. If you want to know more details, go to www.boardgamecruiseclub.com.
That's right. There is no AU in this particular address. No. But the good thing is...
Garth.
You've
got a vested interest in this, haven't you, Garth?
Well, yes. I want to see more people playing cruise board games.
You could play Container. You could play... What's that piratical game we've been playing?
Merchants and Marauders.
Merchants and Marauders. There's so many ship-based board games.
But also, the thing is, you don't have to. Because if you are like some of us, where our particular halves do not care in the slightest about board games, you get to go on a holiday anyway.
Well, you can even spend
time with some family members or some loved ones.
There's going to be Island Knights. What do they say about Island Knights? There's some song about that, I don't know. But there's going to be Island Knights. There's going to be Island Days. There's going to be Sea Days. There's going to be Board Game Days. It's going to be so much fun. I mean, we talk about how much fun we have every year when we go to BorderCon.
Correct.
Where we're playing games constantly with hundreds of our friends, hundreds of friends of the show. Imagine BorderCon, but stretched out over 2 lots of 4 days or more with drinks and with copious amounts of food. I mean, am I painting a picture here?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Anyway, BoardGameCruiseClub.com is where you need to go to check it out. It's happening later this year.
Later next year,
because I'm so excited. I'm wishing it would be brought forward. Garth, what have you been up to lately?
Well, speaking of long-winded conversations about playing board games in particular days in a row, yes, I have just come back from a weekend in the nation's capital, and this nation's capital is Canberra, for those of you playing at home. I was very kindly invited by LFG to attend Essen Unplugged. And Essen Unplugged is all about getting all those hottest and biggest and brightest and boldest and potentially shrink-wrapped still games all on the plane from Essen down to Canberra for people to play and play and play and play. We did. So I do want to sort of just start by giving a little bit of a what is LFG's Essen Unplugged, and just to make you guys feel jealous, really. And by that, I mean Mark and Leon, who, Mark, you sound excited. And Leon, are you awake yet?
I'm very much
That's
awake.
That's good.
Well, I'm remembering the fun that I had at LFG in Sydney. And if I multiply that by Essen new releases and with Renee, who is the most enthusiastic board game teacher I've ever met, and I've had so much fun playing games with Renee. He is amazing. Hello, Renee, if you're out there listening. You're probably not, because you're probably tucked at home in bed, because you're so exhausted from spending the weekend with Garth explaining all those games.
That's right. So, look, the little snapshot, what is it? It is a weekend from Friday, Saturday and Sunday, usually about a month after Essen, where all the hot new releases are in one spot. In this particular year, it was at the East Lake Football Club, which is located somewhere in Canberra. Google Maps just told me how to get there. But because it's in a football club, it's this massive big space with lots of natural light and a plethora of tables that you were able to play at. And what I was immediately impressed was the games table. Now, I was impressed at this for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. The first one being it was full of games, very, very new, that I heard of but had never seen. So I got to pick up some of these shiny new games and go, it's my precious, it's mine. But also, there are a whole bunch of games that you knew and loved that were released in the last couple of years that had been in the LFG library. Now, what I immediately liked is I was able to walk in there and met by Charles, a towering giant of a man who stands about 4 foot taller than I do. And he goes, hey, Garth. I go, hey, Charles. And he goes, okay, well, the game table is yours. But all I ask is that if you unshrink and punch a game, can you put an LFG sticker on it? Because half of these games are brand new, have only been touched by a select few, and the shrink wrap hasn't even been taken off.
And that's the thing Renee told us in his SN interview a couple of shows back, was obviously most of these games he didn't even bring back with him from Essen.
Yes.
They've been shipped since, and as you said, literally fallen off the back of a truck to be there for this weekend.
That's right.
It's just, I don't know that people understand and appreciate what a great opportunity this is for those of us, and I'm talking about us here in this studio, who can't afford to take the time off work, to fly all the way to Germany to see all these brand new amazing games, get them out on the table, learn them. LFG do that for us.
Well, the reality is that most Essen games don't arrive in Australia for a good 3 to 6 months afterwards. So this is sort of that opportunity to be able to play them early. But I don't think it can be underestimated how exciting it is. Just put yourselves in that position when you arrive home at the end of a day and you've got this box that's arrived and it's on the front porch and you open it up and it's the newest thing that you've just ordered from blah, 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 or from Kickstarter. The excitement of unpacking that game and opening up the shrink wrap and opening the lid for the first time and hearing that box go... That's so cool.
Yep.
And to be able to have a gaming convention where part of the process is you get to unpunch and open and then pack it up again. That's actually, like, it's really sad, but it's really exciting to me.
I can see Leon. He is on the edge of his seat here wondering why he did not go to Canberra.
I'm just trying to think of a name for that box sound, and I was thinking along the lines of the board game fart of happiness.
Well, it is exactly the board game fart, because it's always that... a bit lower than that.
And the first one's always the most impressive one.
Oh, but it's so exciting because you know that only you get that experience.
I was going to say, and how... Look, for those people who are listening, who are local in Hobart and maybe aren't part of this subculture genre of tabletop games, how much fun is it, my fellow podcasters, my fellow studio members, to punch out a game that you have been waiting for weeks, nay, months from Kickstarter or from your friendly local internet-based game store?
Look, I think the very simple way to explain it is it's like Christmas. Every single time you get a brand new board game, it is like Christmas, and you get to share that experience with friends and family and whoever. And this is where I really enjoyed my weekend at SN Unplugged. Mm-hmm. So arrived there Friday afternoon.
You took some family, didn't you?
I did took some family. more the pity me, because I'd organised this, and then we had a game night after the show when my particular brother-in-law, Trent, who long-term listeners would know, decided he'd come along. So I then went from having a comfortable trip to now have to putting up with him for 3 days. But anyway, we arrived and we were greeted by Charles and we were greeted by Renee and a whole bunch of people who, look, I love the fact that we get to turn up to these things and people want to come and say hi, and we say hi to people that we've met, which is fantastic. So Trent and I played a couple of games on Friday night, but the first game I want to talk about is the game that started our Saturday morning, which is also one of the hottest games that has come out this year, and it's certainly garnered a lot of attention. And we are talking about the game that I will butcher in terms of its name, and that is
Garth
Zolkin 2.0.
There's a whole video that tells you how just how to pronounce a name. It doesn't even talk about the game. It just talks about how to pronounce a name.
Yeah, and that was wrong because Renee was kind enough to correct Ella, who created that video. But I was very, very lucky to spend some time with both of them because both Renee and Ella were at LFG's Essen Unplugged. So Teotihuacan, or the spiritual successor to Zolkin, is by Daniel Tassini and David Turzi. And look, they've also done The Voyages of Marco Polo.
NSKN. They're
it's brilliant.
I noticed I've been saying smashing them out of the park recently, and really I should be saying they're hitting them for six.
Yes,
to be Aussie.
Or just rolling dice, because that is what this game is not about, but manipulating dice? Yeah, it certainly is. So this is a worker placement game where you will get to experience the greatest city in Mesoamerica, and it's basically a game, because I know we're short on time, where using the rondelle method, you'll be moving your dice around the board. There are eight spaces that you'll be able to put your dice in. They're always ever going to be going in a clockwise direction. They're all going to start as number ones, as in they're kind of weak sauce. But every time they go to one of the actions, they'll be promoted.
Hang on, Garth. Are you not... This might be a concept that some people aren't familiar with. Are you not rolling these dice?
No, you're not.
What?
No.
What?
You are merely placing them on one space and going to another.
Well, hang on. Take a step back. What is the point of dice in a game if you don't roll them?
Well, let me get to that point, Mark, because just think about this particular game where your dice start out as weak and not quite useless, but very close to it. Because on this board, you're going to be trying to do so many different things, you initially may not even understand what it is you're trying to do.
Really?
But the great thing about this game is when you actually sit down, dissect it, look at the board, it's actually not that complicated.
Mm.
And a lot of people have been comparing it to Zolkin because of the similar Central American theme.
Yep.
And also the fact that it's by the same designers. But for me, these games share thematic similarity, but mechanically, really, really worlds apart.
Okay, because there's no cogs.
No.
And, I mean, Zolkin, the thing that blew everyone away was, you know, you had these moving cogs on the board. But you're saying you get the similar effect without the cogs?
Yeah, you do. And the reason for that is this dice manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have, as I say, eight particular places where you'll be able to move your dice. And each player is going to start dice in different parts, which is there's a standard setup. And then there is, thankfully, really just a whole bunch of additional boards that you can stick on which cover up the existing action so that the board can be manipulated in a whole bunch of different ways to create a whole bunch of replayability. Wow. But I'm just going to talk about base, vanilla, no bits and pieces, Zolkin 2.0.
City of Gods.
City of Gods. So there's going to be three main resources that you're going to try and get because you need those three resources to build the stuff. You need wood, you need stone, and you need gold. But also the fourth resource that I didn't mention, you need...
Crystal skulls?
No.
Oh, cacao. It's our favourite resource.
So no corn this time?
No, because corn has been replaced with cacao.
Right.
So cacao is what you're going to be feeding your dice every single turn. And in a lovely thematic touch, weaker dice require weaker corn. Cacao.
Cacao.
And that's good.
Chocolate.
Because this game...
Leo knows about chocolate.
I do.
Really
covered in it half
makes you search. Really makes you search for that precious cacao. So what are you going to do?
Even my wife's birthday.
You're going to basically be moving around the three dice that you initially start with in this rondelle method. Now, for anyone who doesn't know what a rondelle method is, you basically can only move your things in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be going up to three spaces. Zero is not considered a legal move. You have to move at least one. And you're going to have eight different spaces doing eight different things. They will vary from gaining wood, gaining stone, gaining gold, being able to build this pyramid, which is probably one of the most physically enticing part of its parts of this game. You're going to be able to bling out that pyramid with steps.
Wow.
Hello, steps. You're going to be able to build buildings. You're going to be able to advance your own technological prowess. You're going to be able to go up 3 different temples. Anyone play Zolkin and know that there are also 3 different temples in there?
Yes. The green temple, the yellow temple, and the brown temple.
And you're also going to be able to go to the palace. So you're going to go to these different places, and this game is all about the point salad at the end. So all of these things are going to be good. Some of them are going to be valid for end of game scoring. Some of them will give you an immediate benefit. And some of them, like the temples in this game and Zolkin, will offer you a combination of immediate benefit.
Yep.
Plus, if you happen to be lucky enough to reach the top of the temple, some very buku endgame poor scoring points.
So the rondel, I guess now I'm seeing it, you've got the rondel mechanic where things are effectively progressing around a circle of, let's call it a circle.
Yes.
But without physically progressing around a circle. So that's obviously the similarity. Now, what I want to ask is, when I look at this board, I see Mahjong Pyramid.
Yeah, okay.
So where do the Mahjong tiles, or they look like Mahjong tiles, that you build that central pyramid with, tell us how they come into it.
So all of them relate to one specific action that you can do, which is the build the pyramid action space.
Oh, wow.
So you'll only ever go there if you've got enough stone and enough wood to build. And the good thing is it's quite simple. You go there, you play some of your dice there, and you'll be able to build one or two or potentially 3 different parts of this pyramid. Mm. Now, one of the end game conditions is if the pyramid's ever completed, game over. Time's up. But that is also a way to gain some initial points.
That's a party game.
And also to be able to progress some tracks, progress a little bit further on one of the 3 pyramid tracks. So you'll go there, you'll pay your resources. There's always only ever going to be 3 available tiles that you can add onto the pyramid.
Ooh.
And it's a little bit of a puzzle because each of the tiles will have up to 4 different symbols, and you want to make sure that you match up as many of the symbols on the tile to the symbols that you're going to place it on. So there's initial symbols on the baseboard where the pyramid is started.
Yep.
And then as you... Yeah, and then as you build up from there, there is going to be symbols that you'll see on the top layer of the base or what have you that you'll then want to build on the second level. And the more of those symbols you get, the more points you get, and there'll be a smattering of coloured symbols thrown in.
Are they the just looking at a photo,
yeah,
they sort of look like some of them might be the symbols for the 3 temples?
You have hit the nail on a particular head-related implement, because if you manage to sort of combine a coloured symbol with the same symbol below it, you'll be able to then immediately progress on one of those temple tracks. And that is a massive bonus, because part of the benefit of this game is that you want to chain your bonuses. And that will become more and more complicated because you've got 3 workers out there doing 3 different things, but they can ultimately all tie in and make potentially one turn be a really big points benefit for you.
Now, Garth, you said that this game has a lot of end-of-game scoring as well as it's very point salad-y. Now, I know for a fact you're not a point salad man, because when you're a teenager, you were not bitten by a radioactive point salad.
Correct.
So
I also don't like salad full stop.
Well, sometimes there's bacon in it. Ease up. Anyway, so what do you think of the point saladness or the end-of-game scoringness of this game?
All right, so I'm going to compare it to a game we haven't talked about, which is Coimbra.
Yes.
And the reason for that is Coimbra, you will gain the vast majority of your points at end-of-game scoring, or
only if you're clever, Garth.
Leon's in the room,
Mark. Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to have to time travel to a future episode where we talk about that amazing game of Coimbra we played.
So this game has a whole bunch of end-of-game bonuses and multipliers and what have you, but the great thing is it's for everyone to see. And once you actually look at this board, it's not that complicated to understand.
Yep.
So we were able to play it. We were able to teach. The whole experience went about 2.5 hours from start to finish. And this is with 4 players, none of whom had played it before.
That's very good. Compare it to our early games of Zolkin, where we really struggled through.
One of the players was Trent as well. Oh, my goodness. I factor in the Trent tax in all of that. So, look, this game deserves, as far as I can see, a whole bunch of plaudits. It is not as intimidating as my first game of Zolkin, because after game one of Zolkin, I just hated it. I went, this is stupid. Why is this game? I don't like it. After game one of this, I went, oh, let's go back. I want to do this because I can do it better. And that's the joy of this game. Nothing you will ever do is really bad, but it's all about maximizing every single turn you have. And there's no real interaction with other players. It's kind of that solo puzzle, except for the fact that the cost of doing every action as you move your dice is higher if there are more different colored dice on the action space. So the interesting thing is you move your dice to a space, and if there are three other dice there, and it might be Leon, one of your colours, and Mark, one of your colours, and one of my colours, I have to play a cacao for every different colour dice that's already there, including my own.
It's good to get in early, and it's latecomers pay more.
Correct. So if there's no dice there, you pay zero. If there's one dice there, even mine, I have to pay a cacao.
Okay.
But there's always... Look, it wasn't as hard as Zolkin in terms of you can always get cacao. You can just go to a space. You get one cacao for every different coloured dice that's there. You just forfeit the action. Done. This game deserves a whole bunch of talk. We will do that when you play it.
I was going to say, this sounds like, Garth, this sounds like it might have moved onto your looking out for a secondhand copy / I might even be willing to buy it myself.
Yeah, look, this game, and especially because where Zolkin has the cogs... Mm-hmm. This has the dice progressing, so a one becomes a two, becomes three, becomes a four.
So you never actually roll the dice?
No, never, ever.
Oh, why are we using dice?
So that's interesting in itself. Wow, but then also because the game itself comes with a whole bunch of additional cardboard, so the action in the corner, which allows you to get wood, you just replace it with something and you mix up all of the eight action spaces, so a strategy that worked last time isn't going to work again.
Sounds like replayability out the wazoo.
I'm really curious to give this a go again. So that was Zolkin version 2.0.
Teotihuacan.
Thank you. We will come back after this song, and I'll probably have to talk about another game that I played at LFG's Essen Unplugged. With the Dice Man coming. Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
That was Beck with Walls on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Now, Garthy boy, all the games you played over this long weekend of yours, I'm sure they every single one of them was brilliant, wasn't it? Every single one of them you loved and would happily buy? Is that a possibly a no? So you talk about a game now?
Yeah, let's talk about a game that I played, and this was one of the first biggest games that I played on the Friday night.
Yeah.
Trent and I, as I said, walked in, said hello to everybody, and then we looked at the game table and went, where do we want to start? Where do we want to start? And we went, you know what we're going to
start with? Start with a big one?
No, we started with an easy, light one, and we started with War Chest. Now, War Chest looks bloody amazing.
Oh, you did post a photo of that on our Instagram account at DiceBenCometh on Instagram.
Correct. So this is a little two or four player, but not three, abstract war game. And it was really fun. Trent and I actually played maybe three or four games. Smashed him.
Really?
In almost all of them. But this is not the game that I want to talk about.
But it's that quick, is it?
Yes. It was great. Okay. It went from tense. Ha! Smash Trent.
It sounds like the sort of game that you would like go, wow, that was so good. Let's go and buy a copy right now.
Yes, Trent did. He bought a copy. It was great. What? So there is a copy sitting in his person cave.
Wow.
Which, depending on how quick my choice for games tonight will go, we may be able to get a four-player of this out, so I'm really curious. Anyway, this is not the game I'm going to be talking about. I want to talk about Spirit Island.
Spirit Island, Garth, that's one of the best board games in the world. It is number 23 on the board game.
Wow. So that means that's the eighth best thematic game ever made in the world. Not only that, I will point out to you, gentlemen, sitting opposite me, it's the 14th best strategy game in the world at this time, according to some experts who are those people who ply their trades on the Board Game Geek's website.
Yeah.
Yeah, have you played it?
No.
No, but I brought it up recently because I'd seen it. For some reason, I was on BGG. I don't know why. And I'd seen it on there and gone, we haven't played that yet. And how is it so high just out of the blue?
Well, it was just, it was not that long ago on Kickstarter, was it?
No, but there's a... And then there's right now.
No, there was a newer version of Kickstarter. That's right. But the actual,
and some expansions.
The normal game has been out for, I think, probably 2 years. So I remember seeing it at BorderCon. A couple of who were playing it, and it was played a couple of times at BorderCon.
Would you like to talk about it?
No.
Oh, well, I'm going to. So Spirit Island by R. Eric Rouse, who has done precisely nothing apart from this game. Well, look, I tell a lie.
Fealty.
He's done Fealty. So look, in terms of rank, Spirit Island 23. Fealty, 2,489, and followed up by some Spirit Island expansions and not much else. Look... This was the first big board game that we played, and it does say that it plays in 90 to 120 minutes and plays 1 to 4 players. We selected on 3 players. We thought, 3 players is pretty good. The way we started, as I said, Trent and I chose War Chest. Trent sat down and started reading the rules for War Chest, and I got Spirit Island, and I unshrinked it, and I got to punch it.
Wow.
And by the time I'd unshrinked it and I'd punched it, Trent had already learnt War Chest, so we sat down and played that, and I hadn't done anything with Spirit Island, so we played War Chest for a while, and then we thought, well, let's give Spirit Island a go because it's so highly regarded, and we played it, and then we kept playing it, and we were able to find someone, Sean, who was a lovely gamer and had fortunately played it before, and he played it with us, and we played it. And then we kept going.
Yeah.
And then we ordered some dinner and we kept going. And then we thought, well, we better finish this game. So we played it again and we kept going. And it was still the same game.
This is the same game.
Then we kept going. And then about 4 hours later, we lost.
Oh.
So this game...
You lost to the game.
This is...
In 4 hours.
Yeah. So this game is a fully cooperative game where each player is playing a spirit on this particular Spirit Island. You are all trying to stop those damn invaders, which are none too subtly all white plastic pieces that are...
As well they should be.
White explorers, pieces. White towns, white cities... And the very simple way to explain it is the good is wood, the bad is plastic, because as well as being spirits who have some inherent ability, and all of the spirits are unique, you'll have your local tribes and your local population on this particular island. They're called the Dahans, and they will have these beautiful little villages that are on particular spaces, which are little mushroom-looking wooden meeple-y token doodahs. And you want them to survive? They don't. But it's basically a wood versus plastic war for annihilation. Ooh. The way you're going to win this game at the very start is as the spirits and the Dahan, you need to eliminate all the plastic off the board. You need to get rid of the explorers, the cities and the towns. Once you get to a certain point and you've instilled enough fear in them, you've only got to get rid of the towns and the cities.
You make the plastic scared.
Exactly.
You scare the plastic.
And once you make them even more scared, it's just the cities that you've got to get rid of, not even the towns and not even the explorers. Now, that's pretty simple. You've got a modular board that, you know, varies depending on the number of players. You've got a whole bunch of variable player powers with the spirits that you've got. What you've also got is a hand and card management system very similar to Gloomhaven.
Oh.
You'll have this selection of cards that you start with. You're always only ever going to choose two of them. Once you've used those two, they go under the whatever you want to use to hide them until you choose to perform the action that gets all your cards back. That's how the game's going to work.
Okay.
Now.
Sounds like a good game. I would like to play it.
If it's Gloomhaven, it's like
you should,
smashing it out of the park.
You should certainly try it with people who aren't me. So, look, this game thematically... And mechanically is actually really fun and really interesting to me personally. Yeah. I just think that's great. There are so many games like Archipelago where you're going to be trying to spread your influence on a whole bunch of islands and take over this foreign land. But with this, you're playing the spiritual side of it. You're trying to just preserve the situation and just deflect and get rid of people.
You're the natives and you are telling those missionaries, I don't want to hear about what you've got to say about that sky-based dude. Just go away and
correct.
Leave us alone.
And shooting arrows into waterproof Bibles, apparently. So.
Too soon?
Maybe.
Nah.
No. Okay. So, look, I'm going to say I didn't enjoy this game and I didn't have fun.
Wow.
I know it sounds amazing.
Mm.
This game...
Are you Leon?
Thematically sounds really good and really interesting, but the main point, which is the main attraction of this game, I think, is that it is fully co-op. So everyone gets to work together. But the main downfall is that it's fully co-op and everyone gets to work together because you've only ever got two cards to play. Now, that sounds like a really simple decision. I'm just going to choose the two best cards that will help up my part of the island and my spirits and the Dahans that I might be controlling. Two cards isn't complicated, is it?
No. One of the things about Gloomhaven, because you're not allowed to say too much and you've got that initiative system, you might say, I'd like to go early in the turn, or I'd like to go late in the turn, or I'm going to rush over here and do this, but it's probably going to be towards the end of the turn, so whatever you're going to do before then, that's okay. You're not planning it out minute by minute, action by action. I think that's one of the saving graces of Gloomhaven, is you can't plan too much because you're not allowed to share that information.
All right, so the way that this game particularly works on a turn-by-turn basis is quite simple. There's going to be basically a spirit phase, stuff will happen. You'll earn, let's just say, your energy points, whatever you're going to be able to use, because the cards that you have in your hand are worth different amounts of points and you can either afford them or you can't. That happens, and then you choose the two cards that you're going to have. And this is where you reach this point where you go, because I have my two cards out of the hand of four or five or six or however many I've bought, because you can certainly add to your hand as you go along. But that's where this game starts to become all about conversation and all about working together, which sounds great, but it's really hard because I might just play a card. Well, not even play a card, suggest that I'm going to play a card and say, Leon, I'm going to do a card. And what this particular card's going to do is it's going to protect that area.
Yeah.
And it's going to grow my strength over here. And it's going to allow me to do a thing. But I'm also going to have the three symbols that I need to be able to do some bonus actions. So that's what I plan on doing. What are you going to do? And then you say, well, I'm going to do da 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 da, which potentially makes my turn partially void because you, as a spirit who wants to keep the invaders away, might be looking after one of the areas where the invaders are particularly nasty that I was planning on taking care of. So I go, well, in that case, I'm not going to play that card because cards are really important. I want to make sure I keep that card for when I need it. So I'm not going to play that one. So let me choose another one. How about I do this? And then Mark, playing another spirit, will go, doesn't really work because I'm already going to be doing something else there that's going to take care of that problem. Have you got something that does blah, 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 blah? And I'll go, no. And then Leon will go, well, actually, I've got a card that'll do that and that'll prevent this from happening. But what it doesn't do anymore is protect the bit of land that I was going to ask Leon to protect.
Why doesn't Leon do that? And then you do the other thing. Hang on, no. Wind it back. I can see the problem here.
So this game says it takes 90 to 120 minutes on Board Game Geek.
Right.
We played it for 4 hours, admittedly, for Trenton and I, it was the first time, and for Sean it was the second time, but, and you'll take great pride in this, Leon, it was like playing a game with Mark, because Sean was able to take all of our turns doing all of the things, because he'd go, well...
They're the best games.
Well, why are you doing that when clearly you mentioned you have a card that will do that and I've got the cards that do this and Trent can do that. So Sean turned like a beetroot because he was puzzling over this so hard and he did a brilliant job. He did an absolutely amazing job processing three people's moves where each person had a hand of four or five or six with various combinations of cards. And we just went... This is too much work to be fun.
Can you play this as a solo game?
I hope not.
It sounds like a solo game.
Well, you can play it as a solo game. It plays wonderfully.
Not that I would want to, but wow.
Look, I find, and look, a lot of the conversations we have around games are all about first impressions because as the nature of this particular show goes...
We play a lot of games.
We play a lot of games once, and this is a classic example. Where I just walked away from that going, you need a group of people who all are almost always in sync anyway, and you've probably already played it a lot to be able to understand the synergies that the cards offer and the different spirits offer before this becomes a lot of fun.
Yeah, okay.
So I wasn't impressed. This game, as you say, Leon, is virtually the top 20 game of the board gaming world. It is the 8th thematic most game that we have, strategically the 14th.
Wow.
I would much rather play so many other games in the top 1 or 2,000 than this game. It looks pretty, but it is deceptive. Do not buy it on box art alone. You will be sorely mistaken.
I would love to hear some contrary opinions to this. Hopefully some of our listeners, I'm sure some of our listeners have played this game. Hopefully they'll hit us up on Facebook or Instagram or any other of our social media presences and tell them how great Spirit Island was for them. Because, Garth, it sounds like you were just settling on a not such a great experience. I've got a
hunger. G'day, everyone. Garth here, live from the toilet. I've just thought I'd pause the app I'm playing at the moment to give a quick shout out to all our Patreon backers, because their money makes a huge difference to us. Every single dollar we get, we put back into the show. So far, it's allowed us to go to several conventions this year and also to be able to get enough money to keep creating great content for the show. I also wanted to give a big shout out to every new listener that we've got over the last several months who may not even know we have a Patreon now. If you feel like you've got a dollar or more burning a hole in your pocket every month and you just don't know what to do with it, jump on over to Patreon, search for The Dice Men Cometh, and no doubt your money will go to a great cause, which is getting us out there to more conventions. Every dollar we get goes back into the show. So we make zero money out of this. It goes to getting us to conventions, creating content, and making the show as good as it really can be. So look, anyway, I'm finished with my message now. Got to get back to the app. And thanks so much for listening.
Oh, we've got a hunger here to play so many more board games. You are with The Dice Men Cometh, talking tabletop games on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. That was Death Cab for Cutie, and I've got to tell you, I am so excited because they are touring Australia next March, and I am just about ready to hit the button on my flights to go to Melbourne and see them, because unfortunately they're not coming to Hobart, but I don't expect them to. I'm going to go to Melbourne and see them. I love Death Cab for Cutie. They're
great
so
Australian
much.
Band.
Garth, they are not from Australia. Oh, okay. But they have got so many great songs. If you're an indie lover like me, of course you will love Death Cab for Cutie. That was them, The Sound of Settling. We don't settle for any rubbish here on The Dice Men, and we don't want no scrubs.
We did just talk about Spirit Island. I'll happily not settle
we
for
did.
That.
Now, Garth, before we talk about maybe another game you played, I want to ask you about LFG.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure.
So, look, obviously Canberra has CanCon, which is in the, I was going to say Queen's Birthday, that's BorderCon.
Australia
the
Day.
The Australia Day long weekend in Canberra. And famously, thousands of people come along and play board games.
Yeah, well, look, we were really lucky enough, Trent and I, to be housed by Terry and Merrin.
Yeah.
And they're basically the people who organised the board game side of CanCon, and they were really just getting into the preparation side of it, because you can now pre-purchase your tabletop tickets for CanCon, which is great, which is really important, because they were saying at this year's version, as in January this year, they had to turn people away, which they hated to do, because CanCon is such a great opportunity to get new gamers in. You'd have these new gamers who just picked up their copy of Catan or Settlers or Settlers of Catan, or Carcassonne.
All those three games.
Or something, and they'd say, sorry, we just don't have table space at the moment. And we're talking about table space of somewhere between 450 and 600 people per day.
At CanCon.
At CanCon. Yeah. Now, that would place it just a second place behind PAX in terms of physical seat numbers
tabletop
available
space
for tabletop. So this is a massive endeavour.
And so with LFG, though, not only do you have LFG's awesome library, which I saw firsthand for myself at the LFG event in Sydney, which I am really looking forward to going to again next year, so you've got that great library, but then you've got all the brand new Essen releases.
Yes.
So Did Canberra come out in force to play these brand new releases?
Well, no. No, they didn't. But the rest of the state and a lot of the country did. So, look, it was about 100 people per day was the pre-purchasable tickets.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, we arrived on Friday afternoon and basically walked in at 3 o'clock and there was a smattering of people because most people were at work. They have their lives.
Yeah.
So Saturday was the interesting part of it. Now, it went from the ticket said 12 till 12. We got there a bit before then and there were certainly people there before 11 o'clock, which was great. But it never felt crowded.
Okay.
And one of the things I did find interesting is that it didn't seem to have the same level of Canberran support as something like CanCon. And I don't know the reason why. There was LFG, who has a great presence there. There was plenty of interstate people. And there certainly was people from Canberra, some that I'd never met before and some that I had. But it didn't feel like Canberra Eurogamers had focused on this particular event. And, and I thought that was a bit odd.
I know I did see quite a bit of chat on various different board game-based Facebook groups of quite a few people from Sydney who were travelling up. And obviously it's only 2 to 3 hours' drive to get there.
Yep.
And again, for me as a board gamer who's following this hobby and thinking, what are the newest, bestest games coming out of the Euro? That's the place where the Euro games come from.
Yep.
They were there.
They were. But also, and I have to say this, some of them didn't bother coming, and it was all because of the start time. It was a start time of midday on the Saturday.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's fair enough. You can't dedicate a weekend or a long weekend or whatever.
Yeah.
So my feedback would be started earlier on the Saturday. And we've all been to LFG. We've all been to PAX. Some of us have been to LFG in Sydney and what have you, but started early. I would rather an event start at 9 a.m. in the morning and have a trickle in of people rather than start at midday. And by midday, you've already lost 2 or 3 hours of really good potential gaming going on. And if you're only planning on going for a day, I'd be up at 6 o'clock in the morning driving from Sydney to Canberra. Yeah. I'd stop somewhere along the highway. I'd pick up something or other to fill my belly and just keep going just so that I could have a really good session of gaming.
Get a solid 12 hours of gaming with all these brand new releases.
Exactly right. So look, from a gamer, it was fantastic to be able to always find a table.
Yep.
But I never felt like it was crowded. And the interesting thing was the Saturday was sort of advertised as being sold out, which is 100 tickets.
Yep.
There was plenty of space there that people could have turned up and certainly been able to find a table, find a game. And that's what I'm hoping. My hope, personally, is that an event like this grows. There's scope for, in my opinion, about at least a 50 to 100% increase in the actual attendance rate. Just because gaming, you want it to be exciting. Even when it's a tables and tables full of people, heads down in thought, thinking about the strategic move they're going to make on their next heavy Euro, you want to be able to do that with a whole bunch of friends and people in the same headspace as you.
Well, on one hand, it's great that you can walk up and go, well, Spirit Island, number 8 strategy game I've heard. I might like to play that. But on the other hand, it's great to also walk around and see people playing these games and go, oh, that looks really interesting. I wonder if I can say, oh, can I have that one next?
Yeah.
And, you know, the buzz was at LFG in Sydney with sort of, you know, 300 to 400 people there on the Saturday, for example. That's the sort of feeling you want at a con like this. So I hope that Canberra people will come out in force and that people from outside Canberra, you know, it's not that much of a drive from Sydney. It's a bit of a drive from Melbourne, maybe.
There were heaps of Melbourne people there, which was fantastic. And look, I did do that a couple of times. I would see a game and went, I'm in next.
Dibs.
I did that with Tokyo Highway. Yeah. I did that with the Estates. I did that with, I can't even remember. I played about 15 games. So I can't even remember, but I did that on numerous occasions and just said, I'm in next. And that's part of the fun. You get to meet new people over these games. I just want to go back and do it again.
Now, Garth,
look,
we're almost out of time, but I heard a rumor on the social media grapevine that you played a game of a certain favourite designer of ours who's now based in Australia, where he sort of went, oh, I've never seen someone quite do as well as that with that faction. Is that true?
Well, look, much like Death Cab for Cutie, who should be Australian but aren't, we are talking about Martin Wallace. So
Close enough.
Fortunately, up on the Sunday morning, I'd been able to organise getting a spot at Martin Wallace demoing Wildlands. Now, Wildlands by Martin Wallace and published by Osprey Games is a... It's kind of MOBA-inspired game, I guess. The way that the BGG reads is that great evil has fallen and you've basically got to fight each other and everyone's a different faction and you've got to fight them. So this is a game where there are going to be up to four players and you are going to have a team of five, and the team of five will be really varied. You'll have a couple of people who are a weak source, a couple of people who are really strong, but your faction deck, which is how you control them, is very, very different. You'll have one deck that is really strong on melee, you'll have one that's really good on range, you'll have one that's really good working together as a team of five, and you'll have other ones that are just a weird kind of deck.
So sort of asymmetrical?
Yeah,
okay,
but not too tricky. It's really simple. The whole purpose of this game is to get to 5 points. The way you're going to get to 5 points is by killing five things, because every time you kill an opponent, you get a point.
Yeah, that's life.
Or by getting one of your crystals or your gems, which will be seeded throughout the board. You get one of those, that's worth a point. So you need to do a combination of kill five things or kill or collect some crystals, whatever gets you to 5 points.
Yeah.
You'll have a deck of cards. The cards will all allow you to trigger certain characters to move and do certain abilities. But it's a very simple game, which Martin Wallace is, to his own admission, all about. He wants to create mechanically simple games that require you to make interesting decisions.
Yep.
Now, not having played Brass Birmingham recently, I reckon that might be a little bit different. Might be a bit more complicated to learn, but
it's
anyway.
A bit old school, Martin. But talking about someone who's smashing it out of the park, he's had some real hits lately.
And I tell you what, doesn't look like changing. Yep. He has got a very busy next year or two.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough to play this game with Rodney from, well, he's now doing a whole bunch of articles with Brave New Board Games his designer diaries. And then I was able to play it with a couple of people from the Sydney Beer and Board Games Group, which is a nice collective of Sydney board gamers. And what I was really happy about, and I know the clock is ticking, that Martin taught us the game very quickly. We were able to play it. I was able to victorize everybody and win in front of Martin Wallace. And then he went, wow, that faction never wins. And the reason for that is that everyone has 2 hit points, which means if you take 2 bits of damage, you are dead, apart from your one big bad who has 7.
Yeah.
I didn't even use him.
God,
I managed to win with a whole bunch of really weak source people. Clearly
you weren't playing against people like us.
Clearly a very good teacher. And I was then able to play a really nice, very unique one deck single use RPG that Martin has designed.
Ooh.
Now, it hasn't been published, it doesn't have a name, it doesn't have an anything, but I might be able to tell you about it in future episodes.
Well, we will look forward to hearing so much more about what you got up to at Essen Unplugged in Canberra. I hope people are penciling it in their diaries for next year.
Just quickly with that Wildlands, what's the deal with that? Is it coming to Kickstarter soon? Coming to retail?
It's out. It's available through Osprey Games. So Osprey Games were very generous and they paid for Martin to be there. So he had copies for sale. Ooh. LFG had
it.
Have
they got an expansion or something on Kickstarter at the moment?
There is a lot going on with this game. There is lots more factions.
Okay.
There are some really interesting things that I'm probably not allowed to talk about, so maybe switch off the mic and I can give you a little bit of a heads up on that.
Well, look, we've got to rush out to the door.
Listening to Israel.
And that's how far out we are.
We're gone.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.